All right. My name is Sergei Frolov. I was part of the Delft team for several years. And just 2 months ago, I moved to the University of Pittsburgh. But of course, the stuff I'll present today has to do with the Delft experiments. It was a bit of a challenge for me to pick what to talk about, since our experiment was covered very extensively during the last 1.5 weeks here. But I picked a few topics, and actually we do have more stuff to discuss. And so just find me, and you know, we can just open, look my computer, look at the data, throw ideas around, criticize. I would love to do that. So that would be very nice. To warm us all up, I actually spotted a chance to show off the slides I made some time ago. I never had a chance to show, but now is a perfect opportunity since we have the Higgs group and the Majorana group in the same building, and the two particles were maybe discovered within months of each other. Here's a quick comparison, right? Very simple. Higgs bosons and particles like that are discovered in huge colliders like the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva. Well, we also work with colliders, but our colliders are nano colliders. This is a representation of the Delft device as a collider. You have you create a beam of highly energetic electrons at zero energy, right, that come and they crush into the Majorana, and then Cooper pairs are the scattering products. And actually, based on how easy for this process to occur, for electrons to convert into Cooper pairs via a Majorana, we make our conclusions on whether Majoranas are there or not. So this is, there is a direct analogy to the real colliders.
How do we make these pictures?
We zoom in real close.
You put the camera on.
A picture is actually taken by the left gate number 3. Yeah. Okay. So this is these are the brave people of the CMS collaboration. This is only 1/3 of them. The others were not there for the photo shoot. And they're the people who reported the observation of the Higgs boson a couple of months ago. And of course, we know by now that it does not take so many people to run a nano collider. We're only 6 people. So there is another difference there. And so, and finally, we all heard over the summer this magic number 5 sigma, and I had to look it up on Wikipedia what this means.
Who uses more helium?
Still them. They have to cool the superconducting magnets, right? All right. So the number 5 sigma, I had to look it up, what it means, and I think it means that they're 99.999% sure that they have found a particle, maybe a Higgs boson, maybe something else. Well, in our case, as we learned over the last 10 days, there are many control knobs, gates, fields. It's a messy mesoscopic system. There are other states going around. There are other zero bias peaks. And this is a pretty typical situation in condensed matter experiments. So the best we can say in this case, and maybe in any other case, is that we are pretty sure. This is really the best you can do. And now I decided to dedicate my talk to digging a little bit into these two words, pretty sure. How sure are we? What are the signatures? And so I picked maybe 3 different topics of the measurements we've done to deconstruct. And there are other very deeply suppressed uncertainties about our experiment that I could discuss with you after the talk. Okay, this is actually, normally this is the last slide of my talk. But now this is one of the first slides, the first substantial slide, but I would like to go through this very carefully with you through every line. This summarizes in one slide the the hard conclusions from the science paper that came out in May. We've started with a system in which we try to follow the theoretical prescription to find Majorana fermions in semiconductor nanowires. And before embarking on this project, we tried to verify independently that all these ingredients are there. So we started with very high quality indium antimonide nanowires, which have many advantages, as we know, for these experiments. And then they have strong spin orbit interaction. And we verified that we can induce superconductivity. And so all the right ingredients were there. And then the main signature was the zero bias peak, which onsets at finite magnetic field. And the field at which it onsets was about 100 millitesla. In these materials, it's somewhat comforting that this is the field where Zeeman energy is roughly equal to the superconducting gap. So this is one of the sort of hard to violate prescriptions from the theory, that you have to close the gap. So you have to fulfill this requirement with at least a factor of a few. And now in the new Delft device that is called right now, this ratio is still maybe correct. The onset field is higher; it's a few hundred millitesla. But then the feature that looks like a gap is also larger. So this still holds.
So the delta from your experiment is about 250, not 200.
From the science paper, yeah.
And
this
is 150.
Yeah, so, you know, this is why there's a wiggle here. You know, it's not exactly on, but this is what we could say. Yeah. And actually, one of the three topics I will discuss is what is the meaning of this delta? You know, we had discussed soft gap versus hard gap, but why should there even be a gap if you have a few mode system? And so that's one of the questions.
Can you look at SEM picture? Is that still measured?
Yeah, we first take a picture and then we measure.
Okay, you start to take a picture before measuring.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so
you
know,
so
what
controls this the induced gap or the robustness of superconductivity? And it's obviously somehow the tunnel barrier between the superconductor and the semiconductor. And one way to change it is to cover more or less of the wire with the superconductor. You can even do a theoretical calculation, as Mikhail Wimmer and Anton Akhmerov did in Leiden, that the more coverage you have, the sharper the gap, and even maybe the larger the gap. But in a real experimental system, there are also other things that can go either way, like how well we etched the interface, how big is the diameter of the wire. All these things matter. Yeah. So it's hard to make a correspondence between the half coverage or the degree of coverage and the size of this gap, because there are many other things going on.
Let me ask. Why it's important what the magnetic field was at the onset of the peak? Is this so you can compare the theory papers and see whether you're in the regime that they predict?
Not even at such a detailed level compare, but just if we strip all the detailed predictions from all the theories and just take the basic toy picture that you have to close the superconducting gap and then enter the topological state, and then you should start seeing Majoranas. So just that statement, if you want to see if you are anywhere close to that statement, then the onset of the zero bias peak should be at a field which is roughly of the order of the induced superconducting gap. Yeah, so So you have, on the energy axis, you have this delta here, and with magnetic field, you want to close it, and you don't expect the Majoranas to appear before this point. So this is just what I was trying to say.
EZ is estimated based on what you believe G is. It's not measured, is it?
That's right. Yes. There is another uncertainty there.
So the magnetic field could be higher. The effective magnetic field.
We measure it to a G factor.
Yeah, so we have various states that move with...
But we've also measured the G factor in quantum dots and also in the QPC measurements.
But with superconductor or in clean...
So there's an uncertainty in the effective magnetic field.
Okay.
But the G factor is just...
Well, G factor is highly dependent on the geometry. And
you know all the...
Is it fair to think that this 150 microelectron volt is an upper bound?
It's a
lower bound.
No. Yeah, it's a lower bound.
The superconductor is maybe lower than magnetic.
Superconductor might screen magnetic field, and so field outside the superconductor in the semiconductor might be higher.
Well, there are two effects actually. There are two effects. One is that it focuses magnetic field, so therefore effective field will be higher. And the other effect is that, you know, electrons tunnel between superconductor and semiconductor. A quick picture. It just goes
at the same loop. So the nanowire is also a superconductor.
Well, G factor is very different from that.
Yeah.
So the fraction of time they experience this big G factor also enters the calculation, which lowers the estimate. So there are two competing effects.
Yeah, but we've also measured Andreev bound states where it's very clear how they change in the magnetic field. And the Zeeman energy is within 30% or so what you expect from quantum dot measurements and what have you.
Still all the coming, this is only now from quantum dots or any indication that it is this aspect type that we would like, or
yes, this spin orbit was independently studied in quantum dots through studies of anti-crossings between singlet and triplet states in quantum dots.
But that's for a random geometry, so it could, we don't know what kind it is really.
Yes, that is correct. Well, we in quantum dots, we found something very consistent with Rajpa in direction. It really matched Rajpa because it was perpendicular to the wire and in the plane of the substrate. And the magnitude of Rajpa interaction is entirely dependent on electric fields that you can create. So underneath a superconductor, spin orbit strength could be very different than in quantum dots where we studied it. Yeah. So, but we... if you read the science paper, then the calculations, first we go through some numbers and we say, well, this is where we expect to see the Majorana. Those numbers are for quantum dots without any superconductors. Yeah. Would be interesting to model what happens under. It's a little bit hard to measure.
As scale injection is that's not linear here, not directly. Yeah, not directly. So.
It's difficult to extract spin orbit interaction from the measurements of zero bias peaks. You have to do something different. So maybe find helical gaps in the spectrum. So if you take the Majorana recipe and take out superconductivity, you have 1D wires, spin orbit, and magnetic field. That is predicted to open up a gap. We call it helical gap. So we could try to directly see that gap. From that, we could deduce spin orbit strain. It's also tricky to deduce that.
Can you just try a really higher temperature measurements where you kill superconductivity but have a big field so that you can still resolve it?
Yeah, well, so with the superconductor of choice for us, niobium titanium nitride, extremely difficult to kill superconductivity. You have to go to, I don't know, 20 Kelvin or 15 Tesla. So actually, down here, I say that we've tested it in somewhere. Oh, here. So we've tested that such robust zero bias peaks don't occur if there's no superconductivity. We did it in a somewhat poor man's way. We fabricated an identical device to the famous device, but we removed the superconductor. We replaced the superconducting electrode with gold. So we studied N nanowire N devices. That was the only way we could think of. We could destroy superconductivity. Just physically put gold instead of niobium. Yeah. Okay. So the second line is also very important, and there is now also new evidence. As you know, we moved on to studying various splittings of the zero bias peaks. But at least in the initial devices, what we found was a peak that would just onset somewhere here, and then it would just stick to zero bias very robustly. So this was a very bizarre behavior that we did not really see in any other circumstances. So it would stick around for some large energy range of millivolt. Yeah. So many other effects you could think of would not do that. And I will go through some of them later, but a persistent zero bias peak. Now with the correction that if there are coupled Majoranas, you might also expect the peak to split, and we are looking for that in the new devices. Now we've tested for the relevance of spin-orbit interaction by rotating magnetic field, and then for a one direction of field perpendicular to the wire, we found that the zero bias peak vanished. And it, by an interesting coincidence, it was exact same direction where we found the spin orbit field pointing in the previous measurements for quantum dots. Very different setup, the same material, and we found the same direction. Yeah, I already mentioned the superconductivity. That's the best we could do there. And we've tried it in several devices and in several setups. And I was very excited to see at this conference that Harvard group with materials from Lund have really reproduced our pictures one-to-one, maybe a slightly different conductance scale. But these observations more or less reproduced in another group.
I'm just confirming. So, but the Harvard group, they did not get these zero bias peak vanishing when these align with the perpendicular to the wire. They didn't get that.
They found a different angle. Yeah. They found a 50 degree.
So at 50 degree, they found it vanishing.
Yeah. They found an angle where it vanishes, but it was not 90 degrees. It was 50 degrees.
Yeah. But in your case, it's not necessarily also 90 degrees.
Right.
Not necessarily phase, it's the big direction.
Yes, in fact, we were not necessarily expecting the same angle. That's why I said it's a coincidence that it turned out to be exact same angle for us. But we did not expect the same angle. But we were looking for one direction in which the peak would vanish, and that we found.
You measure, you have two perpendicular directions. You measure all the other magnitudes.
Yes, we measured in all 4 pi angles. No, it should be only, well, there should be the opposite direction, but there should be only one axis along which it vanishes.
So you say that the zero bias peak stays stuck for a significant range of B. Now, in some later experiments, you're finding splitting. Are these wires longer or shorter than the earlier ones?
Same.
So what is giving rise to the splitting now, which you didn't see earlier?
Well, we did see splitting earlier. So in a supplementary information to the science paper, we show an example of a splitting. We did not see it often enough to put it in the main text of the paper. Now, in the new device, with the help from theory, which said, well, the peak should really split, we found regimes and we focused on them where it splits. And it seems to split quite often.
Yeah.
I think it's not only the help from theory, but it's mostly the help from a better gate coupling, where you can actually very controllably go through parameter space and make the split or make the splitting visible or not visible. So we now have much more range in gate voltage.
And you see something?
Yeah. So this, well, I'm not sure I have it in the presentation. I can open the data for you, but it was in Leo's station Q talk.
What is the typical interbands gap in these wires?
In between the bands, one-dimensional bands, it is about 15 millivolts. What we find.
15.
Yeah. So there is a paper coming out in Nano Letters on one-dimensional quantization. Where this will be reported. And now new data also in the Majorana device itself with superconductors, we see plateaus and you can extend them to high bias and they seem to cross at about 15 millivolts.
Now, is there any reliable estimate of the period potential that you have to apply on your, or is it not?
Only from two terminal conductance, I think it's pretty reliable.
Is that 15 millivolts that you say it's just because of just the geometry of the bands, or what do you mean?
It's
just like because of one micron?
It's a confinement in the cross section of the wire.
And does
the
this
smaller size? I mean, like the diagonal. Right?
Yeah.
But the other actually axis is going to be a much smaller.
Of course, yes. But that's not confined. That's.
Yeah, but it's confined in the sense that the energy gaps are not like 0.01 Kelvin is basically like 1 Kelvin, it's like 0.1 MeV, so you can actually come
with
this.
Well, that's a superconducting gap. So that's induced.
I'm just saying, like, if you have a wire, 1 micron by 50 nanometer diameter, right? If you calculate the energies in this black box, so, you know, so the smaller diameter, which is quantified, you say it's 15 MeV. And I'm saying, like, in the other direction, which is 1 micron, if you calculate the energy levels, it's something like 1 Kelvin.
Yes.
It's very close to all these other energies. I don't know how much it's going to affect, but I'm saying like that energy is very relevant.
For instance, Hugh says that the interband energy spacing is like 3 MeV.
I think that energy can also be heavily screened by the superconductor, which is directly on top. The role of Coulomb energy in underneath the superconductor is an interesting question. I think also at Harvard they have now interesting data on that.
But I can say that yes, there's the length is a finite length for the wire is finite. It is hybridized with the superconductor, so there's a ratio of the eigenstates in the wire. What we see is that if we tunnel in from one end and find 0 bias peaks, then it doesn't matter if you pinch off the other side or leave the other side open. So let the states go all the way out, mm-hmm. or you pinch it off, we see no difference.
Is it like 1 micron, half a micron when you pinch it off?
No. So it's 1 micron with an open end, mm-hmm. to another micron in a gold contact, okay. or 1 micron with a barrier. It does make a difference, so. Okay.
Okay. And this is normally really the last slide of my talks. And this is where I listed the directions for the future. And some of them are already being pursued in Delft and other groups. And they also inspired by discussions with theorists and other experimentalists that was already mentioned multiple times that the peak is not quantized in 2 squared over h, but it is lower. We can actually enhance that peak if another state is by accident at the same gate potential. There's some kind of interference between them, and the peak can become 0.1 of 2 squared over h or 0.3. So this number is quoted in a very specific regime of low conductance and no other states around. But the likely culprit is temperature. So finite temperature would make the peak shorter. At least that's what we assigned it to. So we could try to improve that. This is a very important one. And for this one, there is no resolution yet. Coming back to this graph, we in principle should see this gap closing before we enter the topological state with a zero bias peak. that is not observed in the experiment, peak kind of comes out of nowhere. No states around it, and at a certain field, a zero bias peak shows up. So that is an interesting question to address, and there are now theory proposals from Tudor and collaborators that maybe if we tunnel into the bulk of the wire, we should see the gap closing, but not from the edge. Could also have to do with the multi-subband nature of the wire. That the highest subband where the gap is closing is just so weakly coupled to the lead that we don't see the gap closing. It's dominated by the lower subbands. Now we were, another question that we really didn't answer is what is the relation between our gate voltage and the chemical potential or even the density in the wire. And so we saw that we have to tune the gate potentials and that they do something to the zero bias peak. They can make it go away or come back, occasionally split. But we could not write down a relation between the chemical potential and the gate voltage, which is a universal conversion that could establish the relation to theories. So all the theories calculate things in terms of chemical potentials. And we deal with gate voltages, right? So the reason for that was that the devices were pretty clean, pretty good quality, but still not perfect. There were still some transmission resonances. So you sweep the gate and all kinds of conductance fluctuations come in. So these conductance quantization fluctuations, they were confusing the QPC plateaus that were underneath, or they were making the connection between the chemical potential and the gate voltage difficult to deduce. So in the new devices, we have cleaner pinch-off traces. So you sweep a gate and it does something very smooth rather than go up and down. So that's a good sign, and maybe this question can be answered in future devices. And finally, we wanted to see the peak split in a more controlled fashion, and so maybe that one is now also well underway.
So I didn't understand that. Vary the number of occupied subbands underneath superconductor while that you guys do a closing of the gap, or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I skipped an argument here. So one idea we had is that we don't see the gap closing because we have several subbands, one-dimensional subbands, and each is characterized by its own gap. The lower subbands are strongly coupled to the leads. They have a better overlap with the leads. But the gap is closing only in the upper subband. So then if we could take control over the number of subbands underneath the superconductor, we could test this idea. So now we have improved gate coupling by a factor of tens. So now maybe we are in a position to change the number of subbands. And that is relevant for this idea, but also for this.
Do you have any idea how many subbands are occupied?
Yeah, so outside the superconductor, we think it's few, like three. And underneath the superconductor, we don't really know. We know that if by accident the superconductor is weakly coupled to the wire, somehow we had one device where the barrier was thick, and we could still pinch off the wire right in the middle of the superconductor. So that would tell you that still there are only a few subbands there.
Can you explain a little more about this hard versus soft gap? I mean, is it like, are we considering a situation where the magnitude of the superconducting gap through the wire is not uniform, or are we considering a case where there's lots of impedance sites for this wire?
Well, we call them hard and soft entirely based on the data that we obtain. The interpretation of this is a separate problem. So it could be both of the things that you said. Doesn't change the fact that in the experiment, there is finite conductance within the gap. And to the list that you mentioned, so impurities or fluctuating gaps, I would add something maybe more trivial, is that it is an experimental setup where we measure with electrons that come from room temperature with a thermal distribution of 300 Kelvin, and then we do our best job to filter them out and to cool them down by essentially slowing down the electrons in various filters.
What kind of stuff do you use?
Copper powder, RC filters. Actually, it's very well optimized for superconducting measurements, but maybe not to the level that's required here. Maybe we have to do even better. So just don't dismiss the possibility that there are just quasi-particles, hot electrons flying everywhere, that don't care about these gaps, so smearing everything out. So the residual amounts of these hot electrons coming from room temperature. We have to do a better job, and maybe that will also help with this, cooling down the effective electron system better. Yeah?
Also, it's not a good sonic contact necessarily. Do you know what the conductance is in the norm state, or any idea of that? And wave inflation would fill out the gap.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can vary the tunnel contact to the normal part by gate, but still some particles can jump over. So the regime in which we are, where we reduce the conductance by maybe an order of magnitude, so still some normal particles are free to go from the normal side. Yeah, absolutely.
And they can go to the
wall
only through the superconductor.
Yes.
That's for sure.
There are no sinks for them in between the barrier.
But in the new device, they can go to the next.
We could explore that, yeah. But, yeah, this kind of the superconductor is right here, and the other one is farther away. So.
Yeah, the Zeeman field for the onset of the ZPP should be strongly mu dependent.
Yes.
Are you thinking about this issue? Have you seen?
Yes, we are thinking about this issue, and it has to do with this challenge.
Yeah.
How do we connect the chemical potential to gate voltage? Yeah.
Do you see any improvement with the new device? Or?
Not yet. It's too early to say. So, I hope there will be a clear answer to this one. But absolutely, it should be mu dependent, unless there's some disorder which kind of smears and broadens the topological phase. You have several regions where you meet the topological requirement at a different range of chemical potential, but then you always see something near zero bias in a wider range of gates. Okay. This is the device that is currently called, or it looks very similar. The device that's called in Delft. It has several improvements, key improvements in this device. First one is just simply geometric. You can see that now we have two detectors, right? There is a normal lead on the left and a normal lead on the right. So we've made, in one device, two copies of the tunneling experiment.
Is that one Atlas and that one is CNS?
You could say that, yeah. So we, the most naive thing you could look at in this geometry is you can find a Majorana here. Let's call it the zero bias peak here. You can find a zero bias peak here, and then you can try to see if they are somehow connected, if there is a single topological region in between. Yeah, so for example, they should onset at the same magnetic field. Yeah, if there is really just a topological state in between. And then by changing this gate in the middle, this gate, we should be able to split the peak, bring it together, and then we should be able to, yeah?
What made you choose 1 micron for the length? Why it could be twice as long?
You mean here?
Yeah.
Well, 1 micron was the length for the original device, and we just wanted to change things one at a time. In principle, what I would like to see is a varied length of the superconductor, but I would not extend it more. I would actually try to shrink it. So imagine if we went sort of in the direction of the Israel work, the Weizmann experiment, and made the superconductor narrower. We should always see a split peak. It would be a nice data point to put on the rail, and then make it 2 gates wide, you know, 3 gates wide, 4 gates wide. Study it as a function of width.
What is the mean free pass between these wires?
Hundreds of nanometers, very, very long. So this is 100 nanometers. It's a quasi-ballistic conductor. Okay, so this is an obvious improvement that you see just from the picture, right? And by the way, there was a lot of discussion of the what would constitute a smoking gun evidence. I think studying this geometry could bring you the definite proof. At least the best you can do in terms of tunneling experiments is if you could correlate the two sides of this device and prove that the two zero bias features are connected, this would be a very strong indication for that all these theories are correct. So I think.
Well, I mean, why do you say that? I mean, any zero energy regular Bolzano quasi particles will have the same spin. They will have the similar wave function correlated between them.
Yeah, I mean, you have two of them on the same.
If they appear as both, even magnetic field.
I mean, how do you know?
Zero magnetic field.
Let me put it this way. Taken this list and add to this just one more thing, that there are two zero bias peaks on the opposite ends, and that they appear and disappear at the same gate and magnetic field settings, then all that together would be a strengthening of the argument.
Yeah, we're strengthening that. But I'm just saying that what if the chemical potential is cutting both bands on both ends? So you get
that would be a coincidence.
Well,
that's not robust.
If you see the same splitting oscillation in both ends at the same time, that's more.
But I'm just asking, why is that a smoking gun for a non-degenerate state at both ends? And it could be a degenerate Bolzano state at both ends, which is at zero energy.
Why they have to go together? Local perturbations could just move one of them around by itself.
Yeah.
If you add just one,
it would be coincidence to both these things together.
Somewhat
they'll affect each other, but
wouldn't
it why should it exactly
both
be?
To the left side and to the right side? So
one state here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it affect things in both directions? Because the current enters from the superconductor.
Like if they have gates.
Yes, I think that's one possibility also, but we would be able to tell based on which gates control these states. Yeah.
Which
state? So whatever zero bias state we find, whether it couples to all the three gates or to one gate, would tell which scenario we're dealing with. So I think this is a way to obtain an improvement on the signatures we have, and this is our best hope. But it will all depend on the tuning of these three gates. Yeah, and the outcome, if we had the data, I could point out what the possible scenarios are. Right now, I'm just saying that this is the best option that we have, I think. Now, there is preliminary data where they found the zero bias peak on this side, and they found it on this side. And now to correlate the two is the next step in the project. So it involves tuning these three gates.
It would be easier with the shorter wire, I think.
Yeah, possibly.
If you have some strong impurity in the middle, maybe you cannot get rid of it.
Yeah, so maybe the next device will have a shorter section here.
But then the gate will influence both.
Yeah.
Well, no, we can make smaller gates. No problem. Make anything. Yeah?
One general comment on this issue of smoking gun. After all, we're looking for zero modes which are insensitive to anything. So, we drift more and more towards the direction of identifying them by how they are sensitive to flux and so on. so to magnetic field and so on. So it seems to me that the so two smoking gun is if the oscillations of the splitting die out when the length of the wire gets long, because that's what that's the defining property of these zero modes. Is this something that that we can, you know, see coming? Same experiments on the wires, or plate lines, longer wire, and looking at the oscillation as a function of length?
Yes, of course. As we already discussed, right, the wonderful set of measurements would be to shrink the superconductor way short, so that they always split, then start making them longer, and then study what these gates do. So for some intermediate range, they would make this peak split and come together, and then finally, when their superconductor is very long, peaks will just become insensitive to these gates.
That's assuming you have those two and not
inside. Yes. Assuming it's very clean.
Yeah. This is for as long as the wire doesn't affect the gates, don't introduce new ones.
Yes. But you know, we can always assume this is one topological region, right? And assume there are 50 gates here. So gate number 25 in the middle will not do anything, right? It just makes another Majorana here. And these are still too far. But a gate nearby here should still split the peak. So, you know, the gates are really powerful. So this is maybe one message to theory. Don't think about changing the length or magnetic field or KF. We have these wonderful gates, and we can change how wide they are, how many we have. We can do a lot with these gates. And we have these non-local geometries. We can also insert a probe here. That's a little bit harder. You know, you can have a T-shaped wire with one leg sticking out here and make a probe here. You can do all these things. So we can really, you know, we can do a lot.
Can we think, if you have many gates beneath the wire and beneath the superconductor, can we think about, you know, vacating completely the wire below the superconductor? So actually, when you put the tension on the gates and make the wire short?
Yeah, so this is, these are the, so I said, improved materials here. There are improvements that you don't see in this SEM picture. And the improvements concern, we have new wires, which are fresh. So they've grown recently, and so they're cleaner. So maybe longer mean free paths, like fish. These are sashimi-grade wires. And now, also, the dielectric is different. So it's half neon oxide versus silicon nitride, and it's thinner. So the gate coupling is stronger. So we think that now maybe we finally can deplete the wire and make it shorter. Yeah.
So you use half neon oxide now?
Yes.
Half neon oxide also sometimes sort of sharp track.
Yeah, so we had one device which was very switchy, and now we found a device which is relatively stable. Not perfect, but it's kind of okay. Yeah. All right. So only now I get to the three topics that I picked for this talk. But Elsie, please stop me at any moment.
How much longer do you have?
Well, I can talk another hour. But
can you wrap it up in about 10 minutes, you think? 5 to 10 minutes?
Yeah, it depends on, you know, how we structure the discussion.
You say we have another talk after this?
What?
Did you say we have another talk?
We do have another talk after this one.
Right after? Maybe we should
move
this
afternoon.
That's unreasonable.
During the wine? No, we'll move your talk to 2 to 3, and then wine and cheese starts at 2:30. Is that okay? Okay, then on.
I can finish whenever.
We'll start your talk at 2 o'clock. That's fine. And right now it's 11:47, so can you finish by noon?
All right. It depends on how many questions there are. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you can see what the density of questions is. So assuming the same density, can you?
Why don't you just stop me?
Okay, you really want me to?
Why don't you just stop me and I will shut up, half sentence, whatever.
Okay.
We can do it Dutch defense style. You know the Dutch defense, the lady with the stick comes out and
yeah.
You can be in the middle of answering a question and when she hits the stick on the floor, everyone shuts up and the defense is over.
Okay.
And then you are responsible for. All right. It's actually very nice that we came to this because it also ties in with the previous discussion, and the other two topics are less relevant. So states that run parallel to zero bias peak at finite bias. So kind of overlooked features in many of the scans that we reported and that we keep obtaining. You can see them in the paper. You have to be a little bit careful. And I think I did not see a very good explanation for them. We have some hunch. And what I'm talking about is, for example, this graph is from the supplementary information of the paper, which is treasure chest of various things that need to be studied, that are understudied. And this is actually not from the main device that's reported throughout the paper, but from a second device. And the data is a little bit switchy, but you see starting at zero magnetic field, zero bias peak onsetting, this little darker color here is a zero bias peak in this region. And now above one Tesla, there is actually no zero bias peak, but you can see other modulations of conductance that run parallel to zero bias at finite bias. Yeah, they are symmetric. In this one, I would say I can see four. It's not the color scale doesn't do this justice, but like for example here, you can see 1, 2, 3, 4 lines.
Is that the reflection?
Should I be looking at lines or these really dark blobs?
Lines, brighter lines.
What are the dark blobs that seem to be much higher intensity?
That's why you never see the lines that run parallel, because everyone looks at blobs or these things.
I'm just asking what are these?
These kind of
am I trying to
bright
lines.
Here's one. Here's another one.
I see the lines, all right. But
here's a third one.
Smaller intensity than.
He's asking whether this blank.
But the black ones in between that also parallel line like this are things in between the bright bulbs. Those are the background things.
Yeah. Well, it seems like in some places the background is much stronger than the signal.
Stronger color, but it is just assigned that color. The background is dark color, and what's above the background is this paler color. This is actually so. If you go to the science website, you can download this raw data of this data set, and we give you a software where you can load this graph, and you can play with the color scale. You can set this to pink, green, maroon, whatever. You can invert the colors. You can plot line cuts for all the data reported in the main paper and in the supplementary. And so this is kind of, you have many things on different energy scales going on in the same graph, and we pick a color scale that kind of tries to highlight most of them, but it is hard. But I have more examples. So for example, this is also in the supplementary information of the paper. This is another example of a field dependence of the zero bias peak. I like it very much because it has some of the same features to the main graph with the wings, but it also has new features. So for example, this is a zero bias peak. And in this case, it extends to about one Tesla, starting from 0.1. The intensity of it goes up and down. Here, you almost cannot see it. It's, again, the color plot artifact. It is, in fact, there. And then it continues on. There are these dramatic states that move with Zeeman slope. There is this thing we call the induced gap. And you can continue it kind of on to here. And then what happens here at this end, I don't know if you can see, but there are three very faint lines that run parallel. And these two parallel lines, they might even still be here. They're really hard to see, but they are there. And so they run parallel to the zero bias peak, but also parallel to this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to show us any constant magnetic field traces
No,
kind of
no. I'm sorry, I left them out, but I can, on the scale of the time I have, I cannot put them back in, but.
But it's something that we can just, yeah. People are interested in surely discussing here, right? You have a couple more days, Sergey?
Okay? Yeah, I'm here for a couple more days, and we can open them on my laptop and see. But I stared at these things for a very long time, and there are lines that run parallel. So also in this graph, this is a new data from the new device that is called right now. And I also, with this projector, it's a bit hard to see. But there are also lines that go parallel. There's one here, one here, one here.
Do they have any slope, like a small slope?
Not that we... Maybe sometimes they move a bit, yeah.
So if you go back to the previous slide, apart from zero bias peak, there's also variation in the gap, right? So at some points the intensity is high, and then
yeah, that's down. Another good question. Yeah.
What do you know?
No, I was also. It was amazing to see that the same thing. So. There is a higher signal here than here. The same thing happens in Hugh Churchill's data from Harvard. There is not always, but sometimes a kind of change in the intensity of this gap with magnetic field.
But there is still a gap if you do the trace?
Well, there is still a little feature, which is the same scale as these little peaks. It does not look like a... like a gap, like a soft gap that is stuck in our heads.
Is it in all your samples, or this is just?
You can. That's not absolutely universal, but quite often it is harder to see the gap at higher fields. So here, for example, as well, here you can see the gap very strongly. It's a bit smaller range, so you don't see it going back down. But then out here,
it flattens out.
At sort of above one Tesla, in this case.
Did you get this covered by series in terms of the magical?
Yeah. So this is one idea that we have, is that maybe these states that run parallel are the quasi-particle ears from different subbands. Yeah. But it is, we considered many different things that can happen near zero bias. For example, a peak that is stuck. At zero, states that run through with a Zeeman slope, a peak that splits in two and comes together, those are the common things we think about. But what about a peak that is at finite bias and just kind of goes parallel? What could that be? Maybe a subbed quasi-particle edge of another gap from another subband, or some strange Andreev bound state which does not have a field dependence but is not at zero bias. What are those things? Yeah, so it would be interesting to think about that.
And was this device literally the length of the current supernatural still
pump? Yeah. This is seen in all devices.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so also, in principle, in this became by now canonical plot, we always point out that the zero bias peak onsets, and then what happens to it at the far edge at about a half a Tesla. Sankar Dasarma says that it splits. And then they even wrote a paper about the splitting that motivated our new experiments to see the splitting better motivated. We were already looking for it. But if you are really critical about this region here, and you look at how these structures evolve, you might say, well, maybe still the zero bias peak just dies, and these guys are already here, and they're coming up from lower fields, and there is a region where the zero bias peak coexists with side peaks. It just come Yeah, so for example, so it's these are also the curves here are pretty flat with little wiggles. So it's hard to say whether it splits or whether there are three peaks there. There are also little structures, even at zero field, which might be. Yeah. So here is the most clear graph of the ones I picked, but especially at this lower bluer region, you can see a couple of lines running parallel through a large range of fields. This is also the data where they think they see splitting, zero bias peak onsets, and here it splits, comes together, and splits again. But there are also states that maybe go sideways. A rich picture. Okay, so this is the first point I wanted to make: the states that run parallel. Yeah, and what could they be? I just picked a few examples that we all stare at, and try to look at the data.
And so these states are below the what you think is the induced gap.
Below, but I think also sometimes above.
The above ones are probably easier to interpret in terms of gaps in the lower bands.
I think the lower the band, the subband, the smaller the gap. That's a naive picture.
It depends what index it has for the transverse.
So then the lowest subband would have the smallest index, and it would have the smallest gap. Because the electrons kind of bounce off the superconductor less frequently and interact with the condensate less. So then.
But it also depends on disorder and how smooth the confinement is and things like that, because those states can move in the gap.
Yeah, so the idea is that if we had a purely ballistic multiband system, we would just have no quasiparticle ears like this, which are coalescences of several Andreev states, but we would have parallel lines peaks at the values of the gaps, nothing in between, and then when you add disorder and maybe temperature, they all come together and smoothen out into something that looks like a soft gap. This could be one scenario.
Can I ask you a question? You spend a lot of time pointing out these parallel lines in the picture, but if you've given us an explanation, I haven't heard it. Is there one? I mean, is there some sort of symmetry that would cause these lines to remain parallel? Why don't they move around?
Well, this, I think you captured the essence of my puzzle.
Oh, so it's a puzzle.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe I missed an explanation.
No, there is no explanation. No,
no, there are possible explanations.
So one possibility
unproven,
I was...
Unproven explanation.
Well, okay. One I was dwelling on is the stick.
Yeah, this is, it's time actually. So if there's one compelling explanation,
let's hear it, and then we're done.
Let's hear the best. Like, we don't have time for all the bad explanations. just the one good one.
The best explanation is we have several subbands in the wire, and each subband gives you one Andreev bound state, and it produces one peak in a given trace. And this would be how it should look in a very clean system. So you should not expect these ears at all. You should just expect flat conductance and multiple peaks here. And now, still, why do these peaks not move in magnetic field?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a big puzzle.
Uh-huh.
And that's what...
Well,
if they're clean subbands, then each one is just an Andreev bound state. And they should just split. Why don't they split? I don't know.
Okay, on that note, thank you, guys. But it-